who nurtures and nourishes his devotees with a taste for devotional service. Devi Krishname Prokta Radhika Paradevata Sarva Lakshmi Mayi Sarva Kanti Sambohini Para. The transcendental goddess Srimati Radhika is the direct feminine counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna. She is the central figure for all the goddesses of fortune. She alone possesses such attractiveness as to attract the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. She is the direct internal potency of the Lord. She is the transformation of Krishna's love, the embodiment of his Ladini Shakti, without which he cannot derive any pleasure from anything. And the personification of his mercy, which is essential for our developing a relationship with Sri Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Gitavali, sings nine songs in praise of Srimati Radhika, beginning with like an invocation verse. He who has failed to very carefully worship the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, which are the abode of all auspiciousness, who has failed to take shelter in that transcendental abode filled with cognizant jewels and gems and decorated with a beautiful lotus named Radha, and who has failed to associate with the devotees of Srimati Radharani, who are exceedingly wise and whose devotion to her is profoundly deep, how could such a person ever begin to enter deep into the ocean of transcendental knowledge? Please try to understand this fact with attention. And then he elaborates, and then he concludes his introductory song, singing, abandoning wealth, followers, wife, children, home, position, intellectual pursuits, academic pleasures, I take exclusive shelter in the dust of the feet of Srimati Radharani. This is Bhaktivinoda's solemn declaration. The mercy of Sri Krishna is attracted by receiving the blessings of saintly persons. With conviction in this principle, Gaura Mohan Dey would daily invite numerous sadhus to his home, even though some of them were of questionable character. He would serve them with loving hospitality and request only one thing in exchange. Please bless my son that he may be recipient of the grace of Srimati Radharani. And his aspiration was that his son would thereby become an empowered preacher of Srimati. And that son's horoscope made his father delightful. That Abhay Charan, at the age of 70, would sail west and open 108 temples. Those blessings were coming our way in 1969, this very time of year, right about this same day. On that journey, the Bay of Bengal turned rough, and Srila Prabhupada was experiencing great difficulty. Reaching the Red Sea, the situation became critical. Srila Prabhupada experienced two heart attacks in rapid succession, and believed if a third was to follow, it would take his life. During that crisis, at night, in a dream, he saw Lord Krishna expand into his many avatars, who assured him, "I have taken charge of the ship. You simply have to come along." By mid-Atlantic, he wrote in his diary, "The sea is now calm, and I've regained a little appetite. Today I cooked khichdi and it tasted so good. I've regained a little strength to continue my struggle. And yet I am feeling deep separation from Vrindavan, from Radha Gopinath, Madan Mohan, Sri Govinda." He repeatedly expressed how he was struggling in great difficulty, and repeatedly he gave credit for his inspiration and strength to Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which he says, "I'm tasting the nectar of Lord Gauranga's teachings and mission, and that is sustaining me." He observed Janmashtami, mid-Atlantic, with the captain and his wife. Vyasa Puja went unobserved. And Radhashtami is not mentioned, but that is about the date that Srila Prabhupada made another entry in his diary, beginning with the invocation, "I emphatically say unto you, O brothers, you will obtain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord Krishna only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you." And then he went on to describe his mission. "Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, my Guru Maharaj, is unparalleled in his devotion to the son of Mother Sachi. He is that great exemplary, unparalleled preacher by whose desire the holy name will spread throughout the Western world. And when that holy name resounds from every town and village, in every country, from every stream and river and pasture and forest and hill and valley, then the true Vaishnava's desire is fulfilled. I have no devotion or ability to achieve this, but I do have great faith in the holy name of Krishna." And toward the end of his entry, he awards an unexpected confidential glimpse into his own relationship with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes, "When will that day come when, early in the morning, I'm once again running through the forest of Vrindavan, playing and frolicking in the meadows and pastures? When, oh when will that day be mine?" And then by the time he reached Boston Harbor and saw the skyline of that city where everyone was so immersed in the modes of passion and ignorance, he wrote, "My Lord, I don't know why you terrible place. But if you have some purpose for me here, then make me dance, make me dance, make me dance, O Lord, according to your desire. And then, 1966, Anuradha Ashtami in Montreal, Srila Prabhupada began the lecture by saying that this one Indian Mataji is going to read to us today from Ramayana. But this is Tulsi's Ramayana. He explained how that relates to Valmiki's Ramayana. And then Srila Prabhupada completely forgot about the lady who was sitting there ready to read for the morning program. And he mentioned that today is Radhastami. And he explained in a way that was very special to those of us in the plow department, because he explained that Srimati Radharani appeared when her father was plowing the field. She appeared in the furrow as a Bhumikanya, an earth child. The king and queen at that time were elderly and had for yugas desired a daughter. So he took her home to his wife. And she said, "Where have you found this girl?" He said, "In the furrow." He explained it very simply. In that year and following years, Srila Prabhupada elaborated. And he explained how to worship Radhastami. He said, "Our business is serving and worshiping Srimati Radharani. And in Vrindavan, you'll find everyone is still chanting Jai Radhe. They're more interested in Radha because they acknowledge that Krishna is her property. Don't worship Krishna directly. You will be the loser because we are insignificant, tiny jiva souls. How much love and devotion can we offer to Krishna? And how much of his mercy can we imbibe in reciprocation? It's insignificant. But by her intercession," and Srila Prabhupada explained how she thinks. He said, "We worship her today by Pushpanjali. And in the process, if you place a flower in her hand, she will say, 'Oh, you have brought this flower for Krishna?' He says, 'Patam pushpam balam tayam yo me bhakti pratiti.' And she takes it to Krishna. And he says, 'Oh, you've brought a flower?' He said, 'This devotee has offered you this flower. Please accept it because he's better than me.' And Krishna has to accept, whatever a fool I might be, because it is recommended by Srimati Radharani." Srila Prabhupada extended and revealed to us the mood of the six Goswamis, who we know were dispatched to Braja to rediscover and excavate the lost holy places of Krishna's pastimes, to build temples and install deities, and to write books on the science of devotional service. The six Goswamis who are residing now with Sri Sri Radhavendavan Chandra had delightful pastimes that are not so well known as their philosophical, cultural, and intellectual contributions to the world. Srila Rupa Goswami stayed at Terakadamba, and in the shade of that Kadamba tree, when he would write about the meeting of Radha and Krishna, the tree would just burst into blossoms. And when he wrote of their separation, the tree would shed all its petals as if crying. And Sanatana Goswami, who roamed about oftentimes in the Nandagram district, would regularly visit Rupa Goswami. "What are you writing?" And one day he said, "I've just completed a string of like flowers, which is the praise of Srimati Radharani." Sanatana Goswami was so eager to see it. And he was reading, just relishing every word and every verse until he came to a description of her long, flowing, braided hair, bunched up in a, whatever you call it, on the top of her head, with a diamond instead of that bunch of hair. And he used as a simile to describe how that jewel reflects on the patterns of the braids of her hair as it moves with her motion. And reflecting on those patterns is something like the brilliant jewel on the head of a serpent, swaying back and forth with her movements. When Sanatan Goswami saw that verse, his pleasure was disrupted, clearly, to Rupa Goswami. He said, now, up until this verse, I'm relishing your exquisite choice of similes and poetic composition. But this verse seems very dissonant to me. How could you compare her hair She, the embodiment of love and devotion and mercy, the most exquisite repository of all virtues and beauty and charm and sweetness and innocence, how could you compare any part of her to a lowly, wretched serpent? And Rupa Goswami said, yes, you're so right. My dear Guru, please tell me what would be the appropriate simile to use. And Sanatana Goswami began contemplating that the moon reflecting on the crisscross waves of the ocean at night would be something like that. But that's not quite appropriate, because although the ocean is black and has crisscross waves reflecting the luster of the moon is not like a diamond. It's kind of golden and has pot marks. So half of the analogy is appropriate, but the other half is not. So the Venus sparkling in the twilight sky. But then, although Venus looks very much like that jewel, the twilight sky is still infused with some purple and blue. So the other part of the analogy is appropriate, but the second part is not. So he was thinking, what is an appropriate simile? And nothing was coming to him. He started pacing back and forth in the room, and nothing was coming. So they went out and started wandering down the path. What is the appropriate simile? And Rupa Goswami is waiting back at Tirthananda. And then he saw, within the forest, an open meadow with a champak tree on which was strung two ropes and on a swing, these charming little girls were swinging someone who was clearly very dear to them, about a 12-year-old girl on a swing, and she was swinging back and forth, and they were all relishing the experience. And Sanatana Goswami was very enchanted. This is Sanatana Goswami, who, if a beautiful lady ever crossed his path, it had no more influence than a piece of stone on the path. But he was very enchanted by this scene. And when he looked closer, he saw that behind this little girl on the swing was a serpent swaying back and forth with her movements. And on the head of that serpent was a brilliant jewel which was reflecting upon the patterns of that serpent's body as it swayed back and forth with its hood raised right behind her head.
And he went screaming, watch out, dear one, there's a snake.
And as soon as he uttered those words, the little girls turned to him and smiled in a very respectful and charming way, and the whole scene dissolved before his eyes. There was no tree, there was no swing, there was no girls, and there was surely no servant. He paid his dunderwats in the dust of the vacated scene, and begged Srimad Radharani, please forgive me for inconveniencing you to come and teach me a lesson. Then he turned and ran back to Tarakanamba, fell at the feet of Rupa Goswami, clasping his feet. Please bestow your mercy upon me. You are my guru now. Whatever of you have written is so perfect and complete, and it is affirmed that it has been accepted and confirmed by Srimati Radhika herself. You are my guru now. Please bestow your mercy upon me. And then Rupa Goswami fell at Sanatana's feet, clasping them. It says, I don't know what you're talking about. You're my guru forever, and nothing can change that. Please bestow your mercy upon me, because if I've ever received anything, it's only because of my relationship with you. And they're begging each other. And he left the manuscript as it was. And then, as Srila Prabhupada told the story with great relish about Shishi Rupa Sanatan, they would meet every morning, not every morning, but often, and time would just stand still as they immersed themselves in the glories and pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And then one day, as morning turned to noon, and noon became afternoon, and afternoon became late, as they were so deeply immersed in relishing the sweet, satisfying topics of Krishna Katha, Rupa Goswami was repeatedly thinking, my guru has come, and I haven't fed him, and he must be hungry, and I'm so negligent. But they were so immersed that he couldn't break away to, and he didn't have anything to eat. They were mendicants wandering through the forest, you know, living on, you know, few chickpeas here and a cup of milk there, whatever anybody would give them, chapatis, just sleeping wherever they were at night for 15 minutes or so, and then continuing their bhajan. So you think, How can I serve my guru? I don't have anything here in this bhajan kutir. And then they heard this sweet voice, more enchanting than celestial music. It was a little girl's voice. She said, Baba, all saintly souls, my mother saw you here, deeply immersed in holy topics, and she was concerned. Because this is Braja. Nobody goes hungry in Braja. You've passed the whole day without eating anything. She was concerned because Radha and Krishna will not allow anyone to go hungry in their home. So she brought out this basket, as you see, filled with, my mother gave me these ingredients, milk, and rice, and sugar, and camphor. So you can cook, cure, and offer it to Krishna, and relish his remnants. But they were still so immersed in the pastimes that they only heard a distant song in the back of their minds, and kind of registered in their peripheral vision that there's a beautiful girl there at the door. And she said, oh, you're not paying attention to me, so never mind, just continue your talks. I'll cook. And she started a fire and made this kheer, and then she handed it to Rupa Goswami. You can offer this to Krishna now, because I have to go, my mother will be worried. So make a nice offering and serve your guru. Goodbye. And they turned and she was gone. But there was this warm kheer, they offered it to Krishna. And then Rupa Goswami served his brother and guru, Sanatana Goswami. And as soon as he caught the fragrance of that kir, he was suspicious that this was not of this world. And then he tasted it. And the waves of ecstatic rapture were spreading through his body, undulating every pore of his being with ecstasy. He knew. And he began to chastise Rupa Goswami. Did you have any desire in your heart? He said, yes, I was thinking my guru was coming and I've served him. This is so inappropriate and inattentive. And I must offer him something. That's all I was thinking in my heart. And then Sanatana Goswami became furious. He said, what have you done? Our supremely worshipable, beloved queen, for whom we perform all our bhajan, all our service, all our worship, all our tapasya, all our everything, you have forced her to come here and cook so that I could eat. Don't ever do like that again. And as Srila Prabhupada said, Rupa Goswami, you have murdered me. And then they just both fell down on the ground, just crying and wailing in deep anguish. What had just transpired? But then he thought about the taste of that kheer again. And then he sat up, and he took a little bit more, and he shared it with Rupa Goswami. And again, the ecstasy. Until they remembered what they had just done, and they fell down crying, until they remembered the taste of that kheer, and they got up again and had some more. And this went on throughout the night, and the next day when the kheer was gone, every day they would break a piece of that pot and eat, and they'd eat a piece of the pot. And repeat the same experience over and over again till the whole, every fragment of the pot was gone. So it was very wondrous to the plow department that Srila Prabhupada told that version of her appearance, because it wasn't until decades later that they found that we found that there was any such scriptural reference. It sounded like he was telling the story of the appearance of Sita Devi and just changed the names. Because the standard story, I mean, there's so many versions because of the different kalpas and the different dimensions of, you know, the standard is, well, there's no standard, but sort of, Surya prayed to Krishna and worshipped him with great tapasya with the desire to attain Gokuleshwari as his daughter. And Krishna blessed him that that desire would be realized. So Surya became Vrishabhanu, who was like a Vrajarshi amongst the gopas, elderly gopas. And he performed hundreds of Rajasuya sacrifices and pujas and sacrifices and austerities and charities and pilgrimages to achieve his desired goal, but other than the one son, Sridhama, no daughter was coming. And like Nanda Yashoda, they were becoming very elderly, prospects of having a child was unreal. So he decided his desire could only be fulfilled by the blessings of Katyayani, who he worshipped with great tapasya, until he heard a voice from the sky resounding that without the holy name, no austerity or sacrifice or anything can really bear fruit. And that holy name must be received from Sri Guru. He was on the bank of Jamuna at the foot of Govardhan, and the nearest ashram was Kratu Muni, where he took shelter, and Kratu Muni awarded him Diksha with the Hare Krishna mantra. He said, this is the supreme of all mantras. Worship the Lord by this mantra. And as he was chanting the Maha Mantra with great faith, Katyayani appeared to him in person and asked, what benediction do you desire? He said, simply having your darshan, all my aspirations are fulfilled. And I said, no, there's something more. He said, if you are aware of something deeper within my heart, you may fulfill that as well. So she handed him a little oval vessel like that one over there on the altar, and then vanished, and he worshipped that little oval vessel until this very day at noon when Srimati Radharani appeared. Meanwhile, in Vindhya mountains, Vindhya Parvat, the deity of that mountain range was a little jealous of the Himalayas, because Himavati, Parvati, had attracted a husband who was very exalted, Mahadev. And Vindhya had a desire to beget a daughter who would attract a husband who was greater than Lord Shiva and would be established as the irrefutable, undeniable emperor. So they worshipped Lord Brahma, the great tapasya, and Lord Brahma appeared to him. And he expressed his desire to have a daughter who will attract a husband greater than Himavati. Brahma blessed him, tatashtu. He thought, then Brahma began to think, oh, how's that possible? Who can attract a husband greater than Lord Shiva? How will my boon be realized? And it was a great anxiety. He worshipped Srimati Radharani, and she appeared to him. He said, please, make my blessing valid. And she said, yes. So at that time, Kirtida and the wife of Chandabhanu were both pregnant. And Yogamaya arranged the transfer, not actually the transfer, the expansion of the children in the womb of the wives of Vrishabhanu and Chandrabhanu to be transferred to the wife of Vindhya. So his wife gave birth to twins who were exceedingly beautiful. And as babies, when he had a brahmana performing their samskara, this was just after the appearance of Krishna in this world. And when Kamsa went to kill, what he thought might be the eighth child, and she flew into the sky and became Yogamaya, and she said, Kamsa, the child who will kill you is already born, but even more of a threat is his eight Sakis, more beautiful and powerful than me. They're already born in various places. And she disappeared. So he sent Putana. He had the demons go out to kill every boy child born within the last 10 days, and he sent Putana to abduct every female child born within that period. And as she's flying through the sky, she saw in the Vindhya Parvat these two beautiful babies, so she swooped down and stole them right from the sacrificial arena. And Vindhya was enraged, and he told the brahmanas, curse her. And they chanted the mantras, and Putana began to become weak. And she was losing altitude, and she dropped one of the babies who fell into the river that flows into the Vidarbha province, where she was named Vidarbhi, and was raised by King Bhishmaka. The other child she held because she was trying to get back to Kamsa, who could save her, but she couldn't quite make it. She crashed. And in the in the wreckage, you know, the baby got thrown into the Jamuna. And then flowing down the Jamuna, Purnamasi rescued her and gave her to Mukra and said, this will be your son-in-law's baby, so take good care of her. And then there's various versions, but King Vrishabhanu, taking bath in the Jamuna, saw a golden lotus, luminous like millions of suns, and a little baby who he couldn't reach. And then Brahma appeared and took her and placed her in his hands. This is the baby he prayed for. And he took her home and told his wife that we have a baby. But she was blind. So Narada Muni, knowing that Krishna's appearance in this world means his Ladini Shakti is also born somewhere in Braj, he was going to the Vrijavasis, you know, door to door, came to Vrishabhanu Maharaj. Do you have children? He brought out Sri Dhamma. He said, this boy is so wonderful. He will play with Krishna day and night and give him so much pleasure. But do you have another child? No. And then Narada was really disappointed. And as he was leaving, Vrishabhanu Maharaj said, well, I actually do, but I'm reluctant to show her, because even though she's beautiful, she's blind and deaf and dumb. But if your blessings could restore her vision, you know the blessings of sadhus contain such potency. So he said, show me. And they took her to the little baby, and Narada Muni offered his dandavats and began offering panegyrics of praise to the baby. And Vrishabhanu Maharaj was so perplexed. And then Bhanu Maharaj and Nanda were such close friends that Nanda came to visit his brother's new baby girl, and when they saw the child, Mother Jashoda just put Krishna right down the ground and went to embrace the baby girl. And while she was holding the baby girl, Krishna climbed up into her lap also and reached out and touched the baby, at which point her eyes fluttered open, as beautiful as a lotus, and she could clearly, and she began to speak as little babies do to one another. And she could hear. And everything was restored and everyone was happy. And at the time of her anaprasana ceremony, when they were just about to offer her for her first grain, she reached over onto Krishna's plate, took some of his prasad, and was happy. And then, as little girls, she and her friends would always put a deity of Krishna somewhere in the corner and cook and offer everything to him. There's two versions of this pastime. There's the standard version, and there's the Vrijavasi version. The standard version is that when Durvasa Muni came, he's like, you know, certain personalities in New Vrindavan, that when they show up, everyone is intimidated, and some people start to disappear. So Durvasa Muni appeared in Braja, and all the little sakis ran, except Srimati Radharani and Ananya Manji. They offered their dandavats and asked, how may we serve you? He said, I'm hungry. So she prepared kheer. And when he tasted that, of course the Vrijavasi version is, she took a little cup of mud, but by her touch it became sweeter than celestial kheer and gave that to him. But whatever it was, or whatever version you accept, he was so pleased that Durvasa Muni, who is good to please, because if he's displeased, it makes life miserable for everyone, he said, I bless this child, that whoever eats her cooking will become ever stronger and younger and be victorious in all struggles in life. So, of course, Mother Jashoda made arrangements that she came to the palace every day to cook. And then even after she was married, Jatila wanted her son-in-law to have to share in these benedictions. But she also wanted Krishna to share. So she let her continue to go to Krishna to cook. And then, but after she was married, well, actually even before she was married, one Sunday morning, there was a rumor that Krishna is at Surya Kund today. So the gopis were all excited to pick flowers to go to Surya Kund to worship Surya. So as they came to Pushpavan, which is at the bottom of the hill there, around Kushan Sarovar, where Radhavindavan Chandra's temple is. For those who aren't aware of the original name before Swanbold Lake became accepted. When they reached Pushpavan, there were so many flowering champa trees that the gopis just fanned out. But the rumor wasn't true. Krishna was not at Surya Kund, he was at Kushan Sarovar, hiding in the dense green foliage of a champak tree, knowing which path Srimati Radharani would take, and with his lotus feet, he put all his weight on one branch, so it bent earthward just far enough that she could reach up with one hand and pull it down a little bit more while she picked the flowers with her other hand and placed them in the basket. At which point, when she was clutching that branch, Krishna moved his foot, and the branch flew up into the air, taking her with it. And she began to cry out, "Lalita Vishaka, help me!" And they were right next to the tree, but they couldn't hear her because of somebody's internal potency. And then that same person snuck out of the tree and was walking up the path, and he sees, "What are you doing? Is this some kind of new austerity devised to make me a prisoner in your heart? Or are you trying to impress me with your new acrobatic maneuvers?" And that just incensed her all the more. And she's calling out, "Lalita Vishaka." And he said, "They obviously can't help you, but I can." He said, no, "I'm a new chaste housewife. Don't dare touch me." He said, "Well, your reputation for chastity is comparable to mine as being an honorable gentleman, and you might ask me for a favor." He said, no. But her lotus feet were right at the level of his chest, so he very gently rubbed his palm across her lotus feet and placed it upon her heart. He said, "Well, I can see that my cows want my association more than you do, so I'll just leave you hanging around here like you seem to want to do." And he turned and walked away. And she cried out, "Krishna, bring me down from this tree." And he turned and looked at her. He said, "I'm not accustomed to lifting weights. And if you want such a favor for me, at least you could ask in some kind of a humble and polite, sophisticated way." And then she realized, and she told Gopal, "You have succeeded in making me your dancing puppet. So if you want to save me, you can." So her shawl was snagged on the branch of the tree. That's why she couldn't just drop down, because then it would have shredded that shawl. And then Lalita Vishaka would certainly see her with Krishna in that attire, and they would make much of it. So she was really in a desperate condition. So Krishna very gently, and Lalita Vishaka, although they couldn't hear anything, they were watching attentively, as he so gently placed her back on the ground. So that dust is the treasure for which even Krishna hankers. And we hear it over and over again, that it's not what you give, it's what you hold back that Krishna takes notice of. And to make that point very clear, one day when Narada Muni came to Dwarka to visit Krishna, he asked him how you are. He said, I have a terrible headache. And if this headache persists until evening, my very life will be in jeopardy. And Narada said, well, what can be done? He said, there is only one cure, the dust of the feet of my devotees. So Narada ran off and went throughout the whole universe. First he went to the queens who were right in the same building, beginning with Rukmini. And she said, no, that is adharma. That can't be. He went to Satyabhama, said, Krishna is Param Brahman. How can put the dust of our feet on his head? All the queens said the same thing. He went to Brahma and Shiva and everywhere. All the devotees said the same thing. That's a dharma. We cannot comply. And he came back to Krishna. It was getting late. Nobody will give the dust of their feet. He said, did you try the gopis? He said, no, I went everywhere in the universe except Braj. So he went to Braja. And coming from Dwarka, crossing Jamuna, he saw the gopis on the bank, the tearful eyes looking towards Dwarka, and he saw Narada Muni coming. And they asked him, you appear to be coming from Dwarka, how is our Praneshwara? And he's suffering terribly. And by night, his life will be in jeopardy. So they asked, so you've come to Braja seeking some special panacea in the forest here? He said, yes. Well, what is his name? He said, the dust of your feet. Srimati Radharani immediately began to gather the dust from her feet, and all the sakis did the same. And they asked, please take this quickly back to Krishna. And how will you carry it? Great devotion and care. So Narada is about to leave. He thought he should ask, do you know the consequences of putting the dust of your feet on his head? And Srimati Radharani said, although we are simple village girls, we are not unaware of the Vedic conclusions. This means we will make a contract with Yamaraj to go to his place forever. But what is hell? We've already given our lives to Krishna, so please take it quickly to him. So Narada rushed back with the dust, and he gave it to Krishna, and his headache was relieved just before sunset. And Krishna asked Narada, you know, you're my devotee. You could have given the dust first thing in the morning and relieved me from this whole day of suffering. But that's not the point. You needed to learn something. They are exemplary because they have given their lives to me. It was 100 years to the moment when the curse of Sridharma wore off and the separation of the gopis from Krishna ended, hearing a verse in praise of Siddhashram, a holy place where Kapila Muni attained perfection. And Srimati Radharani, who had been lifeless for that 100 years, sat up in great expectation and asked Chandranana, what is the benediction awarded by bathing in the lake at that holy place? And Chandranana said, the benediction will be that you no longer will ever experience separation from Krishna. So we're going. And within moments, a long, colorful caravan of hope began wandering through the hills and valleys and forests of India, close to Dwarka. And just before they reached there, Krishna told the Jadus that we should perform a sacrifice at a holy place. It's a good time to go to Siddhashram. So they said, yes, we'll go. So with Krishna, the vanguard of the mighty Jadu warriors, indefeatable in battle, riding on their magnificent chariots and marching along the road, the infantry following, the cavalry. They're approaching Siddhashram, but they found blocking the road was a group of little girls, 12 and 13 years of age, holding hands, and they just totally disregarded them. They were going to plow right through with their chariots, but the chariots came to a crashing stop. And it came to little girls. The chariots could not go through, and the infantry could not penetrate. And the warriors were baffled, and the queens were curious. What is this? And they asked, and they said, the queen is taking a bath now, and no one is allowed to approach the shore. And when they heard this from these little girls, Rukmini understood, this is the queen of Braja, about whom we have heard so much, whose name Krishna calls out with great separation all through the night. And Rukmini was just humbly lost in adoration, but Satyabhama began bragging. No, she's not the only beauty in all creation. Rukmini, those Kshatriyas were falling off their horses when they came for your claiming the hand of your Swayamvara. And they told the Srimati that Krishna's here. She quickly finished her bath and dressed as quickly as Lalita would allow her, while still making sure that she was perfect in every detail of her appearance. And then, as she approached the line of girls, the sunlight was parting before her in preference of the golden luster which was illuminating the whole forest. And then when she came before Krishna, after 100 years of separation, she uttered those very words that Mahaprabhu echoed in his own humility. That you can't say I have love for Krishna. The fact that I'm still alive after enduring separation from Krishna is evidence enough that I have no love. And then Krishna begged her forgiveness for being a sinner, and she said, I'm the real sinner. The fact that I'm alive is evidence enough of that. But she couldn't go with Krishna at that point because Rukmini was so yearning to serve her, so she took her to her tent. Rukmini Devi served Srimati with such care and attention and affection until she took rest that night. Only then would Rukmini go to Krishna's tent. But Krishna was wide awake, and he said, she's not really asleep. She's pretending to sleep to reciprocate your service. But you have to know, these are gopis. They can't sleep unless they have hot milk before they take rest. She ran back, prepared hot milk, and poured it back and forth several times, placed it in a golden goblet, brought it to Srimati Radharani's bedside, said, I know you're not sleeping. Here's hot milk. Please accept. She sat up and drank the hot milk, went back to sleep. Rukmini went back to Krishna's tent and was about to massage his lotus feet, and she saw they were covered with blisters. She was shocked. My Lord, how did you get blisters on your feet? He said, you don't know. You didn't test the milk. It was too hot. I reside on the altar in the throne of her heart, and it burned me. And then the word got around amongst the queens, and every bit of pride they had as being Krishna's beloved was completely pulverized. And as their sense of humility deepened and their appreciation for the Vrijavasis increased, they began talking amongst themselves. We've heard that at night in Braja, Krishna dances in the most exemplary kind of way. And they ask Krishna, can we participate in Rasa Leela here at Siddhashram? He said, don't ask me. She's the queen of Rasa Leela. Ask her. And they asked her. And she very politely said, yes. And at sunset, they assembled on the shore with Krishna and Radha in the center, and the gopis interspersed with queens in concentric circles around. And by the influence of the gopis, the queens could discern the proper mudras and gestures and movements and rhythms to play and songs to sing and melodies to follow, and Rasa Leela began. And the queens were so mesmerized. They had never imagined any such experience. And the next morning, still mesmerized, they approached Srimati Radharani and said, is that what it's like in Braj? Srimati Radharani, so cordial, so respectful, so graceful, so demure, so mature, so everything. She said, in the most polite way, you queens did very well. You pleased Krishna so much. But to actually answer your question regarding is blissful as it is in Vrindavan, frankly speaking, what you experienced last night, the experience with which you are still so mesmerized, cannot begin to compare to an atomic particle of the infinite ocean of bliss which pervades Braja at all times. And once again, their pride was pulverized to a deeper level of humility, at which point they invited the gopis, come back to us, with us, to Dwarka. And they did. And Vishvakarma made palaces for all the gopis. And Nandan Maharaj and Mother Yashoda also came. And for 14 years, did they live happily ever after in Dwarka? Was Krishna satisfied? Were the gopis pleased? Was anybody happy? Paradoxically, no. Because in Dwarka, there were no adventures in overcoming family obstacles, social restraints, moral codes, condemnation, exile, banishment. Everything was legal, acceptable, and approved. Where was the demonstration of the selfless sacrifice that characterizes Braja as supreme? And most of all, pleases Krishna the most. And Krishna was more torn than ever between the call of duty as the protector of the Jatas and the yearning of his heart as the lord of the cows. So he began to put in fast motion the sequence of events predicating and culminating in his disappearance with the apparent massacre of the Jatas at their own hands, and the rivers of blood from 560 million Jatas that perished. A fate comparable, apparently, The number is comparable to the Kurus that died at Kurukshetra war. Could the Jarus face an inglorious end comparable to the Kurus? These are all stage effects of the master magician Yogamaya. Or the kidnapping of Krishna's queens. Arjuna defeated by a band of infidel cowherd men. Dwarka sliding down and recovered by the boiling ocean waves. It's all just a magic show. An opportunity for them to resume the aprakat lila, which is undisturbed by anything of this world. But at that point, the gopis, in an act of their own, returned to Siddhashram and consigned their sacred bodies to the soil of its shoreland, giving that clay a golden aura, the complexion of the gopis, tinged with black, which is the mascara flowing from the tears in their eyes. And that clay is most sacred for devotees who, while chanting the holy names, mark their bodies with that tilak to imbibe a spirit and mood of separation to enrich our chanting of the holy name. Separation is that ecstasy. Following meeting with the Lord, when you pour out your heart to your beloved, and the whole world becomes meaningful and rich, and then when he vanishes from your sight, and the world is empty and void, and your only solace is to go internal to find that within your heart, your relationship with Krishna continues forever. And that is the mood in the teachings of the six Goswamis, to cultivate that sense of separation. Srila Prabhupada said, they're not saying we've met Krishna. They're crying and roaming through the groves of Braja. Hey Radhe Braja Devi Ke Chalalite, hey Nandushuno Gudaha. Where are you? In the bank of Jamuna? Slopes of Govardhan, where are you? Srila Prabhupada says, this is our mood, searching out Krishna in Vrindavan or within your own heart. So, Srila Prabhupada concluded his Radhastami lecture. Our business is worshipping Srimati Radharani with Vaipushpanjali, and place a flower in her hand and pray, O Jagan Mata, Mother of the Universe, please remember me to your Krishna. Krishna is yours. And then she tells Krishna, this devotee is better than me. Please accept him. And Krishna has to comply, because it's the property of Srimati Radharani. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Srimati Radharani has a parrot, a pet parrot. His name is Shuka. And she feeds him with her own lotus hands, pomegranate seeds, and asks him, chant Krishna, Krishna. And he does. And one day, that parrot flew off to Nandagram. And Krishna heard him crying, what a hopeless person I am to have left the hand of such a merciful mistress to come here. And Krishna took him, stroking him and saying, and consoling him. And he asked only one thing. Please, Krishna, when you leave this world, don't leave me behind. But Krishna told him, no, you have to stay. I have a service for you. So that's Shuka. When Srila Vyasadeva was trying to be philosophical with his wife, but you know, wives are not usually very philosophical, and she was getting drowsy and she yawned, and that parrot flew right into her mouth and went into her womb and stayed there for 16 years because he was afraid to come out until Krishna personally came and assured him that you'll be all right. And he came out and immediately left home, even though his father was calling, my child, he just kept going. And when the word spread throughout the universe that Maharaj Pariksit had only 7 days to live and all the sages were converging there, and he was asking them, what is the goal and purpose of life? But he wasn't satisfied with anyone's answer. Then when Sri Shuka, which means Sri is Srimati Radharani, Shuka means her parrot, who now is in the form of Shukadeva Goswami, he came to that assembly, everyone offered respects, acknowledging him as superior. He began to answer Maharaj Pariksit's question about the goal and purpose of life, but he only had 7 days to speak. If he mentioned the name of his mistress, Srimati Radharani, he would have gone into ecstasy, which would have made him internally ecstatic, outwardly inert for 6 months on end. And Maharaj Pariksit would have never heard the Srimad Bhagavatam, nor would we. So he purposely avoided mentioning her name. He couldn't do it without going into such ecstasy. But as an indirect utterance may be more potent than direct, her name did come up. When in the midst of Rasa Leela, Krishna disappeared with one gopi only, leaving all others behind. And they're searching, following the footprints, and seeing that now there's two sets of footprints, now there's one. He took her upon his shoulders. She must be Aradhana, meaning whose worship exceeds all others. Simply uttering that word, Aradhana, Shukadeva Goswami began to be overly ecstatic, and at this point the 7 days are already almost over, and he had to change the topic. Otherwise the Bhagavatam never would have been completed. Furthermore, it's a topic that cannot be disclosed without the proper guru and the proper understanding, which didn't really come about until the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis, who gave us sadhana, which will qualify us for such topics. And they speak on such things elaborately. Furthermore, anyway, there's many reasons, but that's a nutshell answer. Is there anything else? In addition to the Madhurya, there is an Aishwarya in Braj, which is actually more awesome than any planet. But the awesome nature of Braj is invisible because it's so eclipsed by the sweetness of the first quality on the list over here. Nevertheless, when Kalanemi, that terrible, terrible demon, had two sons who were terrorizing the whole universe, the demigods took shelter of Kartikeya, who, as their commander-in-chief, waged war against the sons of Kalanemi and were bitterly defeated. After which Devi gathered up an army of yoginis who attacked, and they were also sorely defeated. At which time, the demigods went to Lord Brahma and asked him, where are these demons getting their power? He said, I have no idea. They went to Shiva, who didn't know, but in meditation he understood they are deriving their power from the holy name of Vishnu. They chant this Vishnu mantra, by which Vishnu considers them to be his devotees, and he won't kill them or allow them to be killed. He protects them. So Lord Shiva took shelter with Srimati Radharani. Said, please save us. These demons are torturing everyone in the universe. She appeared to him and prayed to Siddharshan Chakra, please protect the living entities. Siddharshan Chakra cut off their heads, and the demigods were saved by shelter at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. So she is very great, but her sweetness eclipses her glory. Because more than anything, our hearts don't yearn for majesty, glory, opulence, or knowledge, or power. Our hearts yearn for beauty, sweetness, and charm. And even though Krishna has it within him, like a cow has milk within her, but it takes a cowherd to draw out the milk and make it flow. Krishna has rasa within him, but only Srimati Radharani draws it out, makes it flow, and distributes it to needy souls. The gopis are milkmaids in the highest sense of the term, because they alone can extract the rasa from Sri Krishna, collect it, and distribute it in a very thirsty world. Where dalakatamatam dattajivanam. Oh my Lord, the nectar of your words, the descriptions of your pastimes, is the life and soul of all who are aggrieved in this material world and cannot live here without that life-sustaining nectar. These narrations are transmitted by exalted personalities. Hearing them eradicates all misfortune. Whoever receives such narrations becomes most fortunate, and those who distribute the nectar, the life-giving nectar of Krishna Gita, are truly the most munificent welfare workers. This verse, which was offered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by Pratapuruddha Maharaj, is appropriate for glorification of Srila Prabhupada, who brought the parched, dying souls of the Western world the life-giving nectar of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. And Srila Prabhupada concluded his 1966 lecture saying that we don't fast all day on Radhastami because she does not want the devotees to be hungry. So we have a feast just after her birth. Srimati Radha Rani Ki Jai, Shri Anuradha Vishaka Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande.
Thank you. Radha Gopinath.
Okay. Can you explain? Don't tell Mother. Which one is Radha?
Radha
Which one is our one?
Radharani. Where is Radharani?
The one with the basket.
Well, on the left of Krishna.
No, this is the fact. Radharani is small one. Is Gananda one very big?
The big one.
Nithar, wife of Nithyananda. Lord Nithyananda.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Past times, some past times we do. Only for Gopinath. Gopinath left is not Radharani.
So
on the other side of
Krishna is
Radharani
or Gopinath?
First. It's Radharani. It's Radharani. This is Radharani. This is Radharani. Where?
Which
one? This is Radharani. Okay.
Radharani is good.
This is what
I
wanted,
the bigger one. The bigger one. Did you do the one in Abhisattva Krishna? Ananda
Manjari?
Ananda Manjari.
I'm sort of
Lord. Wow, yeah. Let me go up top 10 more around.
शाम को
मिलेगा क्या? हाँ, ये तो दूसरा केस है स्ट्रॉबेरी।
ऑफरिंग भी शाम को होगा।
हाँ जी।
ऑफरिंग शाम को होगा।
शाम को। 5 बजे।
केक बहुत बड़ा हो गया प्रभु जी।
अच्छा।
ऑफरिंग में मुश्किल हो रहा है।
क्यों? वो
भोजन ज्यादा हो गया, बड़ा हो गया बहुत।
जिसमें खाना आता है ना ट्रॉली।
हाँ।
जो किचन में पीछे ट्रॉली है, उसमें लेके जाना है।
देखता हूँ। अभी पूरा बनाया नहीं क्योंकि वो
इतना बड़ा तो उसमें आ गया।
बुकिंग भी जैसे नहीं कर गया, वो ऑर्डर भी इसमें इतना कर गया।
ट्रॉली में आ गया।
Thank you.
一己行欲呢？
Thank you.
touch your heart.
No.
See.
No, no, no.
Sweetness.
The simplicity of the simplicity of it. It's much simple living by thinking. It's just like this is the way it always was, and not all this opulent type of thing. You know. For me, it was just this is the heart and soul. This is me. You know, buying thousands of dollars for the flowers. It comes from something that it just doesn't really. I think it's nice in one way, but we have to make it, keep this going.
But it was
lovely. It was lovely.
Beautiful.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when everybody gets some crazy anxieties and stuff, you know, rather than just, you know what I mean, that mode of passion or craziness, just sort of doing it nicely from the woods and everything. But, I mean, you can feel here. You can feel here. Sometimes things get lost with all that. But no, it's nice. It's very nice.
Yeah. Chalo, mommy.